Hello, and welcome to Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine's podcast series. Alfred Hitchcock Mystery Magazine is a monthly magazine of original crime and mystery fiction. I'm Linda Landrigan, editor of the magazine. In our podcast series, we bring you readings of short stories from the back issues of the magazine. For this episode, we have Martha Lufkin reading A Lacking for Salt from our September 1997 issue. Martha Lufkin earned her BA from Yale, her Master's of Letters from Oxford, and her law degree from Columbia University in New York City. As an attorney, she specialized in trust and estates, but these days she is a legal correspondent for the Art newspaper, and her award-winning humor columns have been collected in The Lady in the Hat, available on Amazon. In her short fiction, Ms. Lufkin melds her legal experience and her humor, as you'll hear in A Lacking for Salt.
May 27th, Horatio Hotel, South London, tea. Stopped in for tea sandwiches. Stale. Can't be bothered by that, because far worse bother lies ahead. Trip to America, which I hope to delay for several months. A worse bother and the reason for the trip? A letter from the American lawyer today, who is the executor under Harry's will. Odd it was that my oddball brother did not choose one of his own sons to manage his estate, but the lawyer says Harry hadn't heard from either in years. Other significant fact. Brother's estate exceeds $4 million. Big surprise. I, the sister of the deceased, to be endowed with $3,000 per month for life. How generous, Harry, seeing I'm already 73. But as I really don't deserve your money, I am quite touched. I'm bothered that my brother appointed as executor Smedley. He's an expensive lawyer and will take a big commission from the estate. Called the man today, informed him I will keep a sharp eye on his fee. Attorney will work by the hour for work performed instead of taking flat percentage of the estate as an executor's commission. Harry worked that out. But leave it to the brainy attorney to rack up big bills, filling out forms, signing checks, transferring Harry's bank accounts to the estate, all of which Smedley says must be done. I don't want to leave my shop untended, as the Pampered Palate will launch its new product, Dutch Pancakes, this Thursday. The pancake supplier is really in South London. We'll keep that secret. Hope to make a killing from London food fatties. I'm thinking of asking my recent acquaintance, Ballo Rumford, to watch my shop till I get back. Retired diplomat, Queen's College, Oxford, a vigorous 79, frequently in the shop, asked me to dinner at his flat tonight, where something skimpy. August 26th, Claridge's for tea. Bothered and busy. Still in London, I leave tomorrow for Massachusetts, USA. Haven't been home for decades. Hate U.S. tea. I'm thinking of giving up life here forever. My aged friends are dropping like flies. Funerals in recent months for Betty, Emma, Shirley, Charlotte. The problem is I have no companions in the States. Lawyer says not necessary I come. Harry's estate is fine, but I feel the need to check up. I'm worried about leaving the Pampered Palate. Business is booming. My shop assistant, Georgina, is an airheaded ninny. What if she sells stale stock? The new pancakes sold out. Tit for tat ran a drooling write-up from a food critic. News spot, Dutch Delight. Dinner last night with Ballo was cut short when he choked on an avocado. I had to administer the Heimlich maneuver. Glad I wasn't wearing skimpy thing, which he never notices anyway. Says he hates avocado. December 22nd, Ritz Hotel, Boston, tea. The Commonwealth, beloved by Harry, is designed for ducks, not humans. In all my 51 years in the UK, it never rained like this. I've taken an apartment in this spiffy Boston hotel, Harry's gracious annuity to pay. Harry's will had been probated some time ago. Non-speaking sons apparently were roused by the odor of money. Both of them signed the probate petition at the lawyer's request. All was done by mail, says the super-efficient executor, Smedley. Fussy paperwork remains, however, for Harry's bank accounts, mutual funds, platinum investments. Smedley is very long-winded. He speaks legal Greek, for example. 1041, 706, Q-tip trust, all of which he tells me is tax talk. He has a fancy office with a Boston Harbor view. The marble lobby holds a giant sculpture that looks like a lady's pocketbook, shines like gold. It's probably made of plywood, no doubt costing the lawyer's clients an extra $100 per visit built into the fee. I drove to the town where Harry lived, Ashland. I toured the house. My brother was definitely off his rocker. In the pajama drawer, I found thousands and thousands of dollars of cash in a teapot. I knew something was fishy when I saw it, because Harry hated tea. I took the money to the bank. The manager, a broomstick woman in an expensive suit, sniffed, "Where did you get that?" I told her I stole it and deposited it in Smedley's estate account. It's a small town. It'll be embarrassing. People will talk. Harry was unstable after his wife died. That was a known fact, says the bank manager, Nancy, at a cozy restaurant lunch I took her to. She says she knew Harry for decades. Son George was convicted of a bank funds mix-up in youth. Embezzlement rumors were hushed up. Didn't I know? I told her Harry hadn't written to me in years. I never met the sons. Over a third vermouth, Nancy hinted that Walter, the other son, turned his brother George in, also that Walter fled to Europe to escape his dysfunctional family. I told Nancy she reads too many books. Also, I told her the bank must cut charges for the estate account. I told her that Tiny Tot's orphanage will get part of the residue. The bank fees will come out of the children's suppers. On the fourth vermouth, she agreed. I'm curious to meet these sons who will soon be collecting their checks. $300,000 goes to George. The residue, the big whopper, goes one half to Tiny Tots and one half to Walter. Walter needs help. Major life mess up, hints Smedley. Abandoned by his wife, he lives in Basel, has a baby. Neither of the sons answers their phones. Harry, you left a mess. I suspect the sons' problems were caused by their mother's high-class delusions. Ernestine, a New York socialite, thought she was Consuela Vanderbilt and was a total misfit in backwoods Massachusetts. She held a charity ball. No debutantes came. The loony bin was the next stop. She refused to let Harry or his family see me after my famous comment at the wedding regarding stale cake. This excuse was invented. The woman was pathologically jealous. Besides, the cake was stale. I telephoned the pampered palate. Georgina says all is well. The Dutch pancakes are booming, and the Times of London was there for a photo. Told her to shut up about South London pancake supplier. Ballo has been in asking for me, got Ritz's address and my phone number. Executor Smedley is an overpriced specimen, charges $3.10 per hour. He calculates it per each 6 minutes. I offered to help with Harry's estate to keep down Smedley's fee, which at the end of the day comes out of the shares for Tiny Tots and Walter. Smedley is exceedingly verbal. He got onto the subject of redemption of legacy, the curious case of Cartfield versus Carter, 1896. I told him legal chat was dispensable and left. April 10th, crowded cranny, Harvard Square, tea. Cranny indeed, but acceptable stateside version of the pampered palate. Well, well, yesterday I got a phone call from the lawyer, Smedley. He, come to my office. Me, how much will it cost? He, I won't charge you. Me, then why make the invitation? Anyway, I'm going out to tea. Smedley, we'll make you the tea. George is here. I went to Smedley's law firm, declined the tea. At $3.10 per hour, how much per cup? Mahogany walls on the elevator, decorator flex in the carpet, oil scenes of Boston ships. Lawyers thrive, we pay. Smedley was seated in a decorator conference room. Teak table with zebra wood pinstripes, top honcho leather chairs. How much does Tiny Tots pay for that? I recognized George immediately. He looks just like his father. Surprised to see a child spinning in the next oversized leather chair. Warm welcome from George, handshake, etc. Smedley, there's a complication. George didn't tell us he has a son. Me, how does that complicate things?
Well, not terribly, Smedley said, there being no direct bequest to the grandchild, Huron v. McGregor, 1902, but my letter to you in January did specifically ask, Mr. Millstrom, that you mention any children. I guess I overlooked that, said George, snapping a suspender. Frog pattern. He's a slick dresser, corporate style, working in a bank again? Looks too young to be a father. Definitely not ready for it. He's visibly awkward with a child named Rufus. The mother left him a month ago, Smedley explained later. Poor kid. What a coincidence, I said to Smedley, that he should have the same name as Walter's son. I could have kicked myself. Answer to non-legal question cost estate 2 minutes at 3:10 per hour. Not really, Smedley replies. Prescott v. Willigant, 1911. A coincidence of name is a not uncommon coincidence. Rufus was your grandfather's middle name. Walter's son is Theodore Rufus Millstrom, and George's boy here is Rufus David Millstrom. Since the court has already granted probate, we won't mend the petition, but next time, Mr. Millstrom, please be more attentive. George here to get advance on $300,000, Smedley comments, handing him the envelope with the check. I thanked George for letting me meet him. Long-lost aunt, etc., jolly discussion. Rufus watches everything. Smedley to George. Any news from Walter? I was surprised Smedley would mention Walter, who gets so much more of the estate. Does George know? Neither son was at the father's funeral, the bank manager Nancy said. George, stiffly. I haven't talked to my brother in years. We sent Walter in advance on his bequest, which he received, Smedley went on. $5.16 per minute, have just figured it out. But get no answer at his phone in Switzerland. Shrug from George. I guess he's quite a recluse. Left with child soon after. Rufus seems uncomfortable. George lacks the feminine touch. Have a mind to call that ex-wife and tell her off. George is in Boston for a week. I offered to take Rufus to the public garden tomorrow afternoon. I was surprised when George said yes. Don't care much for children, but this one is my grandnephew after all. April 11th, Ritz Hotel, tea and chocolate milk. Charming afternoon with Rufus at Public Garden. Bought peanuts to feed ducks. Rufus ate most of them. Child afraid of water. Perfectly hysterical when taken to the edge of the lake to see swan boats. Well, tell George to consider swim lessons or some such thing. How does he manage a bath? Child has circles under the eyes, learning first words, George boasts proudly when dropped Rufus off at the hotel. About time for a child over 2 years, but the departure of his mother may explain the tardy talk. Rufus says, ack-quack, to ducks, pigeons, or swans, says, utterwa, to water, ourfla, to flowers in the garden. Sat till 6 p.m. in Ritz lobby waiting for George, who was late. Took Rufus to bar, ordered peanut butter sandwich, arrived on doily with frizzy cello toothpick. Says, oopeth. Told George 10 p.m. is too late to pick up Tiny Tot. Exhausted the diaper supply, requested Ritz concierge order out for same. Delivered to us in lobby by bowing doorman in swallow-tailed coat. Not pleased to learn that Pampers is U.S. brand name for diapers. I would prefer that that word be applied strictly to foodstuffs a la pampered palate. Feel sorry for Rufus. Seems obvious the child would prefer his mother. He goes willingly to his father, but affection seems lacking. Most men are inept at this sort of stuff. I'm taking Rufus to Charles River tomorrow. George is relieved, says he has business discussions, says it's difficult to bring a 2-year-old on a business trip. April 12th, the Ritz Hotel. George is late again. River was bad choice for the outing. I forgot the child's fear of water. Spring day, diverted course to a riverside park, met nannies. One of them is British, says she knows the pampered palate. She said her flatmate wrote to her about Dutch pancakes. Prefers American donuts, however. She offered Rufus one. The child learned the word for donut. Oh, not a telegram arrived from Bolo. He is arriving at the Ritz Hotel this week, seeking amity, friendship, etc. What, etc.? April 15th, Ritz Hotel, tea. Bolo is here, in room on 4th floor. I in room on 6th. Rufus with me for the night in crib wheeled in by Ritz bellboy. Where was George? 3 days of visits with Rufus and Balo. Took them to a movie. Balo stubbed his toe in the dark. Limped to lobby for ice. Much shuffling and seat taking off shoe. I could barely hear. Balo and Rufus get along fine. Called the lawyer to say I think it's strange George spends so little time with his son. Smedley says some men more suited to children than others. Told him not to charge a state $5.16 per minute for that statement, which does not constitute legal advice. Loud cough from Smedley. Will it cost me 50 cents? Hung up fast. April 16th, Ritz T. Rufus and George gone back to California. Hate to admit it, but I miss the boy. Took Rufus and Balo to Crowded Cranny yesterday. Balo, very opinionated, told me I should convert Pampered Palate to Dutch Pancake Emporium. I said no. Balo is keen to put up £30,000. I think it's an excuse to get me back to London. Told him this morning I am not going back to London for this foreseeable future. Balo looked wounded. He, you mean you like it here? Me, not exactly. He, cough. Is it the child? The child, I said, is in California, so what's he got to do with it? Balo, leaving tomorrow, announces has booked room at Ritz for December. September 20th, Crowded Cranny, Cambridge. Conference with Smedley. Meeting lasted 1 hour 28 minutes exactly. 4:54 down the drain. Told him not to charge the estate $15.48 for 3 minutes wasted when expensive fountain pen leaked in his lap. Lawyer can use a Bic pen like everyone else. Orphans not to go hungry. Smedley says settlement of estate going smoothly. Death tax returns approved by IRS and Massachusetts tax authorities. Taxes paid, government satisfied. Bequests under Harry's will to gardener, librarian, lady friend, all paid. Trust is set up at bank for my monthly annuity. Remainder goes to Tiny Tots when I die. Nothing left for estate to do now except pay Smedley's legal fee, pay rest of George's $300,000, pay multi-million-dollar residue to Walter and Tiny Tots. Next step, have everyone sign a counting document listing each penny that came into estate and went out, exonerating Smedley from liability as exec. Smedley will prepare this. Asked Smedley if boy's not upset that so much goes to Walter and so little to George. Estate has $2.4 million in residue left over, meaning that $1.2 million goes to Roger and the orphans each, compared to $300,000 to George. George never complains, nor do I ask him. Pinochle versus Hootwright, 1927, says Smedley. As Walter does not answer his phone, but has receipted for all his payments sent by mail, I assume he is happy with the arrangement and seeks only his rightful privacy as beneficiary, Livingstone versus Trustee, 1935. Asked Smedley what those payments were. He showed me letters from Walter asking for $40,000, $250,000, $300,000. I asked Smedley whether the residuary bequest is generally paid out in such big chunks so fast. Shrug from expensive lawyer. Told him not to charge orphans $2 for that gesture, or I would hit him on the head with Lady's Legal Encyclopedia, which now resides in my handbag. Smedley agreed. Left meeting fast. October 15th, Crowded Cranny. Balo here a few months early. Went to Ritz T. Balo got embarrassing hiccups. Tuxedoed maitre d' brought paper bag, said breathe in, hiccups will abate. Did not work. Balo tried drinking out of wrong side of teacup, splattered sofa. Proper Bostonians seated opposite, not amused. I roared at Balo. Treatment was successful. Balo says I should go back to London. Told him I don't want to have arthritic toe. Balo says rain is worse in the U.S. He asked if I'd heard from Rufus. I told him no, but also told him George is coming next month to meet with Smedley and sign the accounts. I might see Rufus then. November 16th, Boston Harbor Hotel. Balo is quite a detective. I am fuming and flabbergasted. I was brought here to tea by a glowing Balo, shown the menu, and nearly fainted to see the offerings for tea included Dutch pancakes. Ordered a plate, $7, the exact product itself. The South London supplier is thriving off of my publicity. Menu description says, the new food fad in London. Balo says that now that the estate is wrapped up, I should open a branch of the Pampered Palate in Harvard Square and sell pancakes. I have a mind to do so. Annoyed that I didn't get an exclusive from the supplier, I told the waitress the pancakes were stale and sent them back. They weren't. The waitress was apologetic and offered a $7 cake slice instead. Sorry, I sent back the pancakes because the cake was stale. December 1st, Ritz evening. Tea and chocolate milk. Rufus is here. Has grown inches. Steady walker, too. George is here 5 days, signing papers with Smedley. Asked him if I could keep Rufus at the Ritz suite. George was relieved. Has business to take care of. Took Rufus and Balo to zoo. Exhausting. Balo lost hat in rhino pen. Had to get keeper to extract it. Seems Rufus has never seen a giraffe. Now says, "Rajaffs." Says, "I like." Likes elephants, rhinos, donkeys. Took both to aquarium. Rufus likes eels, sharks, turtles. Balo fed donut to seal. Stern lecture from furious attendant. Seal, happy. Took Rufus and Balo bowling. Balo gets hiccups, perfect score. December 6th, evening tea. Again. No George last night to pick up Rufus. Called Smedley. Secretary to Smedley says Smedley gone to lawyer's boondoggle in Hawaii. Left this morning. Secretary no idea where or who George is. Rufus, undisturbed. Asked him over chocolate milk, "Where's your daddy?" Burst into tears. Balo says, "There, there, your father's just tied up in a business meeting somewhere." "Favo a meeting," Rufus agrees. December 7th, Ritz, Balo's suite. Tried to call Smedley at Bar Association Fest in Hawaii about absent George. No luck, lawyers out snorkeling. Called Smedley's secretary, asked if any news from George. No news. Called bank manager Nancy. No gossip on George. She was astonished to hear George was in town. If George is not here by tomorrow, we'll call police to report missing parent. December 9th, Joe's Donuts. Took cab, ended up here. Sign says best coffee in the U.S. Need time to think. Rufus and Balo are choosing donuts. Told them to get me a clunker. Earlier today, took Rufus and Balo to visit Harvard Yard. Stopped at the crowded cranny, where surprising comment made by Rufus. Holiday stock in shop. Christmas cookies from all lands. Told Rufus he could choose one. Showed him gingerbread men, red and green Santas, children's, etc. Child was not interested in gingerbread men or Santas. Instead, reaches for cello bag with Christmas bells decor containing round, hard white cookies, plain, sugar-coated, and says, as if to an old friend, "Pfeffernuss." Wanted nothing else. Said, "Me love, me want." Stamped feet excitedly while I paid the cashier. Stared at the boy curiously. He perfectly pronounced a word which is not English. I asked Balo, "Is this one of the new words you've been teaching him?" Balo said no. Looks at Rufus, looks at cookie bag, asks, "Aren't those German import cookies sold at Pampered Palate?" Told Balo this was true. "I don't remember him asking for them before," said Balo. "Ditto for me. But," goes on Balo, "they only come into the shops at Christmas time." Told Balo if he wasn't so smart, he'd be stupid. "Then why," said Balo, "did he know the word?" Told Balo to sit down and eat his donut. "Reminds me," Balo went on, "of that famous scholar so-and-so who, having never spoken at the age of 5 years, at dinner one night suddenly said to his mother, 'Madam, please pass the salt.' When asked why he hadn't spoken before, he explained, 'I never lacked for salt before.'" Told Balo I got the point. Told Rufus I didn't know he liked, or lacked, pfeffernuss. Rufus said he did. Asked when he'd had them before. Surprised at his reply. Couldn't think straight. Told Balo I needed a cup of plain American coffee. Crowded cranny, too crowded to think. Took Rufus, Balo, bag of pfeffs, came here. Waiting for my cup of Joe's plain coffee. I've got cash in my purse, which I got from the bank to pay the Ritz bill. I'm deciding what to do with it. December 10th, American Airlines. Rufus asleep, Balo snoring. Couldn't get Smedley by phone. Conference office says attorney clan gone out to cross-examine volcano. Hope they all blow up. No, George. Have taken matters into own hands. Went to Smedley's office to check something. Took Rufus and Balo along. Insisted to secretary that I had to see some of Harry's items, stored in falling-apart cardboard box inside Smedley's teak and chrome office. Pocketed some materials from Harry's personal effects. Will replace at appropriate time. Hope will be useful. Idea forming in head. Heading home to Pampered Palate, one stop over first. Hope not to be charged with abducting child. Told Logan Airport, ticket check, that my grandchild's passport was deep in the dirty diaper bag. Balo faints at the smell. Lady says, go ahead. May face trouble when I land. Balo's nose in bandage. Tripped when boarding plane, was carrying live lobster bag, dropped it. Six lobsters escaped, plane held up 1 hour. Stewardess not amused. Ice bag on Balo's nose. Told him he should be able to manage lobsters if I, 73-year-old lady, can get on board with toddler on hip. Disgusted to see Dutch pancakes for sale at airport. Cheap, inferior brand made in Delaware. December 11th, British Embassy, Geneva. Matters under discussion. We three brought here due to Rufus' passport problem. Former diplomat Balo fast-talked to Swiss when lack of Rufus' passport discovered. Balo called UK embassy colleagues who agreed to help us. FBI might get involved. Missing parent problem. December 12th, Embassy Cafeteria. Balo drinking tea, Rufus playing under tables. Phone call to Walter at residence. No answer. Phone call to Smedley. Urgent. Hawaii. Left message at lawyer center. Smedley to get to phone. Snorkel suit or no. Smedley in big trouble as I see it. Called Scotland Yard. Said can do nothing. Called FBI. Said their jurisdiction limited. I should act locally. British Embassy has called local police. Everyone calls Walter. No answer. Christmas season, thefts for sale in shops. I distract Rufus. December 14th, Basel Police. Officer assigned to us is Hesse, young man who spent school year in Idaho. English adequate, but not complete. Familiar with Emmentaler District, rustic area where German dialect spoken, drove us there to town where Walter lives. Passed dog cart carrying milk can. Rufus says, "Og car!" Balo and I exchange a glance. He knows this, too? No, Walter. House empty. Found way in. Rufus, very excited. Sickening feeling. Seems that the child knows the house. To what extent? Same degree of familiarity as a cat? Who knows what a young child is conscious of? Did George bring him here on a visit? Cried inconsolably in bedroom. Said, "Daddy!" etc. House has not been lived in for months. Cobwebs, dust everywhere. Hesse, long talk with neighbor. Neighbor points at Rufus. Hesse comes back shaking head. Neighbor says Walter Milstrom died in a boating accident months ago, the wife too. Child saw all from shore, playing with neighbor for the afternoon. Asks if I am the grandmother. I gave Hesse the photo I had taken from Harry's stuff in Smedley's office. "This is the boy's father?" Hesse asks me, pointing to the photo. I told him yes and no. I showed him two photos. First photo, George, second Walter. Explained that Hesse should ascertain from the neighbor which photo is the missing Rufus parent. Further to ascertain whether the man in the Walter photo is the man who died in the boat accident. Further should ask if the man in the George photo was here around the time of the accident. Answers. Walter photo is Rufus's parent and the man who died. George was here at the time of the accident, was in the boat, miraculously survived. Neighbor pointed to Rufus, shook her head, said bereaved brother of victim took the boy home to the U.S. No other living relatives. Says George was here a few times to check the house in the mail. Says house will be sold. back to the embassy. Rufus needs motherly attentions. He was silent in the car. Embassy says FBI flew to Hawaii lawyer's barbecue, took Smedley from hot dog fry for questioning repayments to dead Walter. Called Smedley myself. Lawyer claims not his fault. Had no indication Walter not alive. Says Walter signed all receipts for the money. Told him he should have checked the signatures on Walter's money requests against the signature of the living Walter on the probate petition before the unfortunate accident. The later signatures were by George. FBI trying to locate the latter. British Embassy has convinced the Swiss to issue emergency passport for Rufus.
December 17th, Claridge is London. Best tea in the world. Rufus thinks so too. Staying in London for good. Fired Georgina from the Pampered Palette. Was selling stale pancakes. Hired Bolo instead. Called South London supplier. Tripled the order. Got exclusive on new item.
Smedley in hot water. Told him he has to waive the lawyer's fee to the estate, which Orphanage and Walter would otherwise pay. Bigger problem with Smedley is the funds he has to scrape up equal to what he paid Walter if George doesn't pay it back. Repayment by George is doubtful since George is still missing. Told Smedley he'd better start selling his teak table and marble floor tiles. Willicott v. Beneficiary, 1897. With Walter dead, Walter's $1.2 million goes to Rufus. I'll fight for that till I'm 97. Terrible boat accident being reinvestigated. Hard to know the truth if George doesn't show up. Smedley pushing U.S. adoption papers fast, no charge. Rufus will stay here with Bolo and me. Adores Bolo, pancakes, Claridge's. Adoption officer requires stable household, so Bolo and I tied the knot this morning. 3 days honeymoon at Claridge's. Unfortunate letter to Bolo today saying his half-brother died. Big shame. Half-brother appointed Bolo to be his executor. Smoots, solicitor for the estate, on fancy stationery says he will handle all. Beware Smoots.
That was Martha Lufkin reading A Lacking for Salt, which was published in the September 1997 issue of Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine. Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine is published 10 times a year by Dell Magazines. To learn more about us, we urge you to go to our website, themysteryplace.com, or look for us on Facebook. You can find the magazine at your newsstand, and digital editions are available at all major e-tailers. This podcast was produced with the help of Jackie Sherbo and Deanna McLafferty. I'm Linda Landrigan, editor of the magazine. Thanks for listening.